From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we begin a special series for the holiday weekend with country music performers. Our first guests are the Dixie Chicks, who are on tour. We're listening to the Dixie Chicks doing a song by Daryl Scott, who's written a lot of country hits. Later, we'll hear from Scott and his musician father, Wayne Scott, and they'll sing a duet. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we begin a special holiday weekend series of country music. Our first guests are the Dixie Chicks, the best-selling female group in history. As you probably know by now, much of their country music audience was furious with them 3 years ago when lead singer Natalie Maines made a disparaging comment about President Bush just before the invasion of Iraq. A lot of country stations stopped playing the Dixie Chicks records, and they had to protect themselves against death threats. In May, they released their first new CD since that uproar. It premiered at number one on the Billboard album chart, but no major radio format has embraced the new CD, and it dropped out of the top 20. Let's start with a track from their new CD, Taking the Long Way. This is the first single from the album, Not Ready to Make Nice.
Forgive sounds good. Forgive, I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price.
We're going to hear the interview I recorded in May with all three of the Dixie Chicks, lead singer Natalie Maines, banjo player Emily Robison, and fiddler Marty McGuire. The group formed in 1989, but it wasn't until 1995 that Maines joined. I asked them first about the big controversy. If you don't mind, I'm just going to like read through, just so our listeners, anyone listeners who haven't been following this will know all the quotes and questions. So forgive me, Natalie, as I play your part for a moment. The initial comment that you made was in March 2003, just before we invaded Iraq, and you said at a concert in London, just so you know, we're ashamed the President of the United States is from Texas. And then you made an apology of sorts later. You said, as a concerned American citizen, I apologize to President Bush because my remark was disrespectful. I feel that whoever holds that office should be treated with the utmost respect. And then more recently you said, I apologized for disrespecting the office of the president, but I don't feel that way anymore. I don't feel he's owed any respect whatsoever. So let's start with the initial comment. Was that, Natalie, was that something you had planned to say? Did you go to the concert saying, this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to use exactly these words. I thought it through very carefully, and this is exactly what I want to say about the president.
That'd be a little sad if that was the quote that I thought about thoroughly. No, it was it was supposed to be the eve of war. The next day was his supposed deadline. So in our minds, war was happening the next day, and nothing was planned. But just what I was thinking when I was on stage was just, it just didn't seem right to not acknowledge. But in my way, you know, I didn't want to get up there and make everyone sad. I sort of wanted to give my point of view, but still in an entertaining way, because we've never preached from stage or that sort of thing. But it was too important to ignore, and we are putting on a music show, so I wasn't going to get on a soapbox about it.
Emily, Marty, were you surprised when Natalie said that?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, because she always speaks off the cuff, you know, nothing's ever really planned. You know, you can always expect just about anything to come out of Natalie's mouth. But, you know, it's, I definitely, this is Emily speaking, I felt this heat enter my body from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes. And I just remember thinking, oh, no, you know, this is going to cause, you know, someone's going to have a problem with this. I didn't have a problem with it. I agreed with her wholeheartedly. But, you know, it was one of those things where I just thought it might stir something up, never to the magnitude that it did. You know, I thought it might make the paper, and that was enough to kind of go, ooh, you know, but nothing to where I felt like it was going to be an issue for the rest of our career.
There were several gatherings to destroy your CDs. What do you think was the most creative way of destroying it that people came up with?
I thought the tractor was pretty good. That got a lot of
a tractor
news time.
The tractor is very symbolic because it was country radio hosting some of these CD crushings, and they'd lay our CDs out on a blanket, and then they'd roll them, either have their listeners stomp on our CDs and crush them, or get a big tractor to destroy them.
How sweet to put a blanket down first.
You got royalties on all those destroyed CDs, though, right?
Sure. Yeah, they had to buy them.
But there were death threats, too. I mean, definitely no laughing matter. What kind of death threats did you get?
You know, there were things. There was a radio station in San Antonio where the DJ, or two DJs, said they ought to get a posse together and go teach Natalie a lesson. And they thought that I lived where Emily actually lives. And that was just, you know, it's hard to pick one thing because on a daily basis it got more unbelievable. But just the overall hatred was the worst part for me. But there was a serious, very specific death threat that came and was taken care of.
Well, let's hear some more music. My guests are the Dixie Chicks, and their new CD is called Taking the Long Way. I want to play another track from your new CD, and this is called I Hope. And you first sang this, or at least the first time I heard it was when you sang it on a TV benefit for the victims of Hurricane Katrina, and this was shortly after the hurricane. Why don't we hear the song, then we'll talk about it a little bit. And here's the Dixie Chicks.
Sunday morning, I heard the preacher say, "Thou shalt not kill." I don't wanna hear nothing else about killing, and that is God's will.
Dixie Chicks from their new CD, Taken the Long Way, and my guests are the Dixie Chicks. You know, your new CD is produced by Rick Rubin, who, among other things, produced Johnny Cash's last recordings. He produced Neil Diamond's recent comeback record. He's produced a lot of hip-hop and heavy metal. It's as if the album comes with this statement, this is not a country record. You know, this is something with Rick Rubin as producer taking it in a different direction. Did you want to make that statement with the record?
We just knew we wanted to evolve, and it was freeing to not have to think about a format. We didn't think about any format. And Rick was a great matchup for us because, you know, when we met him and we asked him, how do you hear us, or what would you do with us? We liked his answer of, you know, I have no idea what the sound is until you write the songs. And, you know, we went in not knowing at all what the sound was going to be like. But we loved Rick's confidence. I think at that time, maybe creatively, we were lacking some confidence. We've always felt like we were definite co-producers on our records. And, you know, we knew that we needed someone else who knew a lot of other things and different ways to do things and different writers and different musicians. And Rick had that confidence.
My guests are the Dixie Chicks. Their latest CD is called Taking the Long Way. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are the Dixie Chicks, lead singer Natalie Maines, banjo player Emily Robison, and fiddler Marty McGuire. Their latest CD is called Taking the Long Way. Emily, Marty, I know you both grew up playing bluegrass and going to bluegrass competitions. I think you both played fiddle when you were girls, you know, when you were young.
Actually, my mom started us on Suzuki violin. It was a rite of passage. When you turned five in our family, you had to start a Suzuki of one type or another. Our older sister took piano, and Marty and I played violin. And I guess as we got, our dad was a country music fan, so as we got older, Marty went to fiddle, and I don't think she wanted her little sister playing fiddle. So I went on in search of my own instrument, and the banjo called from across the bluegrass concert hall. And so, yeah, I mean, from a very early age, we were in lessons.
So did you have other friends who liked bluegrass music? Were you?
No.
No?
Absolutely not.
And, you know, we found friends through bluegrass once we kind of got into it. Marty was in a kids band. She started in a kids band called Blue Night Express. It was the youngest, Texas' youngest bluegrass band. And then I joined when I was 12. And
does that make you that kind of freaks? Like, here they are, ladies and gentlemen, the tot bluegrass band, you know, the youngest bluegrass kids.
That was just our own moniker. We didn't
know.
I don't think
that's
anybody
just
knew
what
who
the
we were.
Said.
Yeah.
We don't know if that's true. Yeah.
We were always in competition with the peewee pickers.
That's right.
What was it like to start off musically in a competitive way, going to competitions? Did that take any of the joy out of the music?
It wasn't really like that. We went to just perform at a lot of the festivals, and there would happen to be a banjo contest or a fiddle contest. And yes, I fought with my parents over whether I wanted to be in the fiddle contest. It was a lot of pressure, but it was more, you know, I really...
So who wanted what?
I didn't want to enter because, yeah, it was nerve-wracking. But my parents, you know, were really smart. They made it a family affair, and we were city girls growing up in Dallas and going to private school where my mother taught. And, yes, you know, no, we weren't getting exposed to anything like that where we were living. And they kind of sought it out and made it something really great the family could do together. We'd go camping and we'd hear other bands. And the more Emily and I were around other musicians that were either our age or older or just, you know, great pickers who kind of took us under their wing. So I think because we were going to see live music our whole lives long, we were constantly getting inspired. And therefore, we kept it up and we kept practicing and wanting to make it a career.
Natalie, your father, Lloyd Maines, is a very well-known, very well-respected pedal steel guitar player and also record producer. And he played with the Dixie Chicks before you did and was co-producing their records before you joined up with them. So before we get to how you... Well, why don't we get to it now? How did you end up joining the Dixie Chicks after your father was already playing with them?
I don't know exactly. They have more perspective from what happened on their end, but I was in college and they called to see if I would sing a song that they wrote, and I said yes, and then I quickly got nervous that I wasn't going to like the song, and I'm not one to be able to fake my way through things, so I wound up loving the song. It was You Were Mine, and little did I know it was an audition, which I did not know that. And then Marty called one night and asked if I'd move to Dallas. We had a gig in about 10 days. I had to learn 24 songs, and in 2 days,
are you kidding?
I moved to Dallas. Wow. Lived with headphones on, and had a big art pad with just key words that would just jog my memory in case of a forgetful moment. And I loved it. You know, at that stage, I, of course, knew who they were, and they heard me sing from a tape my dad had given them, and he wasn't giving it to them to pitch me to them. My dad's just proud like that, and he gave them my Berklee School of Music audition tape, and that's how they heard about me.
So, Natalie, what was it like for you knowing that your father was already, you know, a member or at least a semi-regular in the band? Was that an inhibiting or a comforting idea? Was it awkward for you to play with him?
No, I love playing with my dad, but I wouldn't even call... he wasn't really even a member of the band.
Just on the records?
The yeah. records, and then just really a sparse gig here and there. Mm-hmm. No, I would love it. I would be so proud. And I remember when we played with Buck Owens, and that's another strange thing. Even though my dad's a musician, we didn't talk a lot about music. I sort of learned about my dad's musical taste and history from reading interviews he had done or listening to other people ask him questions. But I had learned that that he and his brothers knew every single Buck Owens tune, and that's what he played in clubs. Those were the first songs that he learned, and we played Buck Owens Club, and my dad played with us, and I just remember being really proud that, you know, my dad probably, you know, in his wildest dreams never thought he would be on stage with his daughter and Buck Owens, and you could just see it. And the same thing with James Taylor. My family, that was the one music we could agree on in the car trip on the way to Colorado or whatever our summer vacation was. And when I got to play with James Taylor and my dad, it was surreal. It was unbelievable. And my dad is not a crier. He's a very man's man. And his eyes were watering.
Marty and Emily, your sisters, and the song "So Hard" is about how you've both had infertility treatments, and you both have twins now. So, do you attribute the twinness to the infertility treatments?
We knew that there was a chance. I think in my case, there's a 30% chance I would have twins. And Emily and I tried for many years to get pregnant, and that was what we ended up having to do, and it was an emotional process, and it's something that we do talk about because it's strange. I mean, among our friends and family, it seems about 50-50, people having to find some alternative help way to help them conceive. And I think growing up, you just think it's a given.
So what's it like now when you're on the road and there's seven children between the three of you? Do they all travel with you? Do you have a daycare center?
They do all travel with us, but we haven't been on the road with them yet.
And during the hiatus when you weren't recording, did you all see each other a lot? Do you live near each other?
It's funny. Natalie's forced to spend a lot of time with me.
Yeah, it's painful.
Because I married her sister's husband's brother. So we met at Natalie's sister Kim's wedding and quickly fell in love. And now...
Me and you?
Yeah. and, you know, now we share a lot of the same family. And we get together at Christmas and different holidays. And, I mean, we're all friends anyway. And, of course, Emily's my sister. So we're always going to each other's kids' birthdays when we can. And... I'd say our lives are pretty intertwined.
Well, there's another song I want to play from your new CD, and this is called Everybody Knows. It's a song that you co-wrote with Gary Louris of the Jayhawks. Tell us the story behind this song, and does this song have an autobiographical element to it?
When we were writing it, we thought we were writing it about other people. But when it was finished and you go back and listen, you realize that you were able to tap into some of the emotions and some of the things that we said because they were autobiographical. It was more autobiographical than we thought it was.
To me, the chorus is more autobiographical than maybe the verses.
This "swore you'd never see me cry, you'd never see me cry" makes me think kind of about you, Natalie. Just
that, I cry all the time.
But you're the last one to have wanted to really open up your life. You're a very private person, and then all of a sudden people are just wanting to know everything about you. I think that was a hard transition for you. So I don't know. That's what I think about with those lines.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much.
The Dixie Chicks' latest CD is called Taking the Long Way. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Tell me now if you came sneaking up behind. Would you know me and see behind the smile? I can change like colors on a wall, hoping no one else will find what lies beneath it all.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble, publishers of Barnes & Noble Classics Edition of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, available in stores and online at bn.com. From the Horace W. Goldsmith Foundation, supporting the new Museum of Modern Art in Midtown Manhattan, information at moma.org. And from audible.com, where you can download and listen to Fresh Air, in addition to audiobooks, magazines, and newspapers. audible.com/freshair. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Sinner, did you ever go sinning? Have you ever been down here as a lonesome and low as me?
That's Wayne Scott from his first and only CD, which was produced by his son Daryl Scott, a singer who has written a lot of country hits. Coming up, we hear from both of them, and they'll sing a duet.
Sinner, did you ever go sinning? You've gone so far you forgot how to pray. Sinner, did you ever go sinning? Have you ever been down here as lonesome and low as me? So long you still can't stand that tune. Sinner, Lord, I'm a sinner. If Eve hadn't done it, I know it would have been me.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're featuring a country music series for the holiday weekend. When Daryl Scott became successful enough with his own country music career to start his own record label, the first thing he did was pay tribute to his father, Wayne Scott. Daryl produced an album of his father singing mostly his own songs, the songs that Daryl heard his father sing when he was growing up. My guests are Daryl Scott and his father, Wayne Scott. Daryl first made his mark in Nashville as a songwriter. His songs have been recorded by the Dixie Chicks, Garth Brooks, Travis Tritt, Tim McGraw, Patti Loveless, and Sarah Evans. At the 2002 Country Music Awards, he won an ASCAP Songwriter of the Year Award. His own albums are more alternative country. And he plays with Steve Earle's Bluegrass Dukes. His father, Wayne, who was now in his 70s, made his living installing chain-link fences. They'll play a duet for us a little later, but let's start with a track from the album Daryl produced of his father singing. Then we'll hear a track from Daryl's new album, The Invisible Man.
It ain't love, it ain't money that makes this world turn around. When you hit rock bottom, you may not be on the ground. Let me tell you something in case you're walking with the cane. It ain't love, it ain't money, it's a whiskey that eases the pain. Well, he's got no business leaving at such an early age. Can't even balance his checkbook. Look at him, he's staring down that road like he can't wait to get away. And he won't even give him a last look. Brother's kicking gravel like it's no big deal. Mama's on the front porch crying. Dad says, come on, girl, he's got a date with the world. And it's just too less age to be frying. The way it was explained to me, history repeats history.
Okay, we heard Wayne Scott singing It's the Whiskey That Eases the Pain, his own song, and that CD was produced by his son Daryl Scott, and from Daryl Scott's new CD, The Invisible Man, we heard Do It or Die Tryin'. Daryl Scott, Wayne Scott, welcome both of you to Fresh Air. A pleasure to have you here. Daryl, when you started your record company, the first album you released was by your father. Now, you know, you're pretty well known in the world of country music. So why did you want your first record to be your father's music?
Well, I just thought it was important. His music is important. I know I'm his son and all that, and there's that going for it, but I really feel that his music is important just because it's so pure and true, especially to the form of really country music or mountain kind of music. I heard these songs all my life, and I know them backwards and forwards, and it was just time to finally get him to come and record these, you know, with a bunch of my friends down here in Nashville, or in some cases we went to him up in Kentucky in his living room, and I just thought it was time.
You've said that you used to think that all the songs he sang were by Hank Williams and Johnny Cash and other venerated songwriters. When did you realize a lot of those songs were his own?
Well, yeah, they kind of blended together because around the house he would do all of that. He'd do Johnny Cash and Hank and Merle Haggard and all that and his own. And there was a time where I didn't know which was which. It was just all blended in as what I thought were great songs. I'd say probably somewhere in my mid to late teens, I started catching on that, okay, that's the Hank stuff, and there's the Johnny Cash stuff, and really starting to see his songs, which were his. And actually, it took, there was one song, which is the title of the record, This Weary Way. I didn't know that that was not a Hank Williams song until my late 20s. It just seemed so perfectly Hank in terms of style, in terms of structure, and that may be from my opinion, my dad's best song. And so that's one that took me an extra 10 years to figure out that it wasn't Hank's.
Wayne Scott, why didn't you make it more clear to your sons that you were writing songs?
I decided to try to be a singer instead of a writer. I tried singing my songs once, and I didn't like the cold feet and cold shoulder I got singing them.
And he's talking about a club. I mean, we used to play clubs like when I was a teenager. So he's talking about a night playing in a bar, you know, where they come to dance and drink and play five sets a night as far as the band is concerned. So that's what he's referring to, you know, that he did his songs one night, and, you know, of course they wouldn't know the songs and wondering why he's not doing, you know, the top 10 of the country music at that time. So I think that was his brush with trying out new, you know, his material out in public.
Did you give up after one shot at it?
Yeah. I've never done it again. Now that's all I do, and it's great. I'm glad that he talked me into doing it, and it's a new experience to me, and people actually listen to me, too.
Well, you very, very generously offered to perform a duet for us, so I'd like to ask you to do a song that Wainscott, you do on your CD. And it's called Sunday with My Son, and it's a song that you wrote. Let me ask you to tell us what you're talking about in the song. It seems to be a song that directly comes out of your life.
Every word of it's the truth. That's the only way I can write. I only have inspiration. I don't have no education. Not that it's a gripe. I chose it. But my son was... the youngest one. I hadn't seen him in a long time, and I had him one Sunday afternoon for 3 hours, and we chose, I just love nature, so we went out into the woods to gather leaves and pine cones and things like that, and it was so beautiful, the song started going. I had to keep turning my back to him to not let him see the old man crying, and I come up with that song. So by the next morning, I had all of it, and it said exactly what I wanted it to say, and this is it.
So
you want to hear it now?
I absolutely want to hear it now, yeah.
Okay. 1, 2.
As I look back on some bitter years, some things don't mean a thing. Like chasing women, writing songs, riding trucks and old freight trains. When I reach back for happy thoughts of things that I have done, one thing that I remember most is a Sunday with my son. From the mouths of little children comes truth and honesty. And this I kept remembering as we gathered autumn leaves. When memory feeds upon the past of things that I have done, one thing that I remember most was a Sunday with my son. Fill his heart with happiness the way that he fills mine. But you just can't make up 10 lost years in just 3 hours' time. Reflections calls for happy thoughts. When it does, well, I've got one. One thing that I remember most is a Sunday with my son. From the mouths of little children comes truth and honesty. And this I kept remembering as I gathered autumn leaves. When memory feeds upon the past of things that I have done, one thing that I remember most is a Sunday with my son. When memory feeds upon the past of things that I have done, one thing that I remember most is a Sunday with my son. Sunday with my son. Sunday with my son.
Oh, thank you for doing that. That's Wainscott singing and playing and guitar, and his son Daryl Scott accompanying him on banjo. And Daryl, thank you for bringing your father to our attention.
Absolutely,
by recording him and pushing him forward like that. We'll be back with Daryl and Wayne Scott after a break. Daryl's new album is called The Invisible Man. His father Wayne's album is called This Weary Way. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Daryl Scott and his father, Wayne Scott. Daryl has written many country music songs. When he started his own record label, he produced a record by his father, Wayne. So, Daryl, you have actually been able to make your career in music, both as a performer and as a songwriter. I mean, you've had several hits on the top of the Billboard Country chart.
Mm-hmm.
Did watching your father when you were growing up, watching him perform, but making a living all kinds of other ways, from working in the steel mill, I think, and
mm-hmm. steel mills and fence construction,
yeah,
delivering oil and mm-hmm. all sorts of things,
and moving yeah. around the country. So uh-huh. watching him do that and just kind of playing on the side, did you think, well, me, I want to really play professionally and make my life playing?
Yeah, I think I kind of knew that even as a kid. It just was, I wouldn't say easy for me, but it came naturally. It was like a natural thing for me to gravitate toward and to play. And because I grew up in a family band. My dad, of course, played and sang and wrote, and I had older brothers who played and younger brothers. And, you know, it was just the kind of what you do as a family, how some we go camping or fishing or into baseball or whatever. And our thing really was to play music. And so I was kind of, online for that, really from the age of 6, I started playing. And, because our family business was fence construction, which is a really hard labor out in the sun kind of thing. I also learned, you know, at about 11 or 12 that it was better for me to stay home, and while the others were working, someone needed to answer the phone and cook. We were a bunch of bachelors, basically. My brothers and I lived with my dad, and so I was the cook, and so I found a way to get out of hard labor actually pretty early, and I just kind of kept that up. I'm still not into hard labor.
Wayne Scott, when your sons were born, did you look at them one by one and think, this is going to be my band?
Yep. That's why they're...
Yeah, he absolutely did.
They're all D's.
Yeah, all your sons, their names all start with the letter D. Why is that?
Yeah, that was for that reason. And they're...
What, so you could start a band with them?
Yeah. And their introduction to music was when they come home, I laid them in the bed and stood over them and played Hank Williams, Johnny Cash. Played with them about an hour or so. So you wouldn't wake up when you heard me singing at 2 in the morning, you know, and for those reasons.
Yeah, we were used to it.
Oh, that's funny.
So they can sleep right through country music, or they can play it. Daryl, you knew he was a musician, I'd say at 3. And all the boys are professional, but... Daryl's the best. I mean, if it's got strings on it, he can play it. And at 3 years old, it was vivid that he wouldn't be no fence builder.
So how did having sons whose names each started with the letter D help you in playing music or creating a band? I mean, I don't get that
part. I was going to name them the 2 D's, the 3 D's, the 4 D's, or however many D's it took. It's all going to be D's, you know.
So Wayne Scott in the 4 D's, the 5 D's, yeah.
That's the way it came. And honestly, that was the reason. I was determined they'd be musicians.
Daryl, where was your mother when you were growing up?
Well, we started off in northern Indiana. That was the steel mill areas. And we all lived together then. And I guess when I was about 8 years old, they divorced. And then, oddly enough, remarried it about 2 years later. And so we all moved to California at that point. And then they divorced again. And so she was in the area. We'd see her often. But she just wasn't living with us.
Daryl, was it confusing for you when your parents divorced and then remarried and then divorced again?
Well, you know, I don't know about confusing. Maybe it was, but you know, in another way, it speaks to you know, how wild they must have been for one another, you know. and in a way that's a really sweet and wonderful thing. I guess they just couldn't figure it out, how to be a couple in the long run. You know, it seemed like they just couldn't keep away from each other. He's over there laughing. But that's what it seemed like to me, you know. And it seemed like, as far as because of the first breakup, and basically we were awarded custody to him, if that's the wording for it. But basically he was our guardian after the first divorce. And it just seemed that was already sort of set as a way the family was going to be. So when they divorced the second time, that, I mean, it just also seemed, there was no confusion about that. It seemed like if they weren't going to get it together, you know, me and my brothers were going to be with my dad, basically.
Wayne Scott, did you know any other fathers of five who were basically raising their children as single fathers?
No, not in those days. When I went to California, I started meeting some. There's quite a few mamas that ran away out there. Instead of the guy, it was the girls would do it just the same. But back here, I was the only one. The hardest part of it was learning to be the mom, but I really enjoyed the cooking and the cleaning and helping direct their music. They were just great, beautiful kids. They weren't the troublemakers that I knew that, you know, some of my buddies had. They were really good. Never a rest, never a school problem, no. It was just about perfect, you know. And besides that, they played music.
My guests are Daryl and Wayne Scott. Daryl's new album is called The Invisible Man. His father Wayne's album is called This Weary Way. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Daryl Scott and his father, Wayne Scott. Daryl has written many hit country music songs. When he started his own record label, he produced a record by his father, Wayne. Daryl, I know when you first moved to Nashville, you moved into your father's house. And Wayne Scott, mm-hmm. Where were you living if Daryl moved into your house?
Oh, I went back to Kentucky. I didn't know that I was a forerunner of him, but he needed the house, and I need to sell it, and I don't belong in Nashville. I, Yeah, I like it, you know, up there in the hills and my four-wheeler and those kind of things. So,
you grew up in Kentucky?
Oh, yeah.
Did your parents work on a tobacco farm?
Yeah. Well, uneducated, I had to go where there's a broom to push. But once I got in there, you know, I got the top job pretty soon because I could learn, and I did. And but I couldn't just call my shots where to live or until with no education, you can't just can't do that. And I don't say it as a gripe. I like the outside, so I love building fences. Say in California, I could build them 12 months out of the year, and we the same in January as we do in June, you know. It was neat. It was great. I was my own boss, and I could schedule the music. I could quit when I wanted to or had to. It was great for me, but I'm not recommending it to no one else. Get you an education.
You left home when you were, what, 15 or 16?
Yeah.
Why did you leave? What did you want to get away from?
Dad worked us 6 days a week. Well, most people did because it was poor. I mean, poverty. And I belonged to Mom on Sunday, and she was great in church, so that gave me 7 days a week, you know, and that was what I wanted away with. I didn't leave in anger or none of that. It was time to spread my wings. I mean, I had to go, and I'm glad they allowed me. And I took one look in a coal mine, and I swore if I ever dig coal, it's not going to be on this earth. I'll go anywhere.
Did you have family who worked in the mines, in the coal mines?
They all did. Uh-huh. Grandparents and all. And if you live in East Kentucky, or you did in my day, and didn't want to dig coal, you went north or you went west. So I went north, and that's too cold for me, and then I went west, and California was paradise to me. I stayed 22 years there. So
building fences in California seemed like paradise compared to the coal mines.
Lord, yeah. I wouldn't dig coal. I wouldn't.
Well, Darryl Scott, it seems to me that in Nashville you live in two different worlds. You put out kind of like alternative country albums, mm-hmm. I think it's fair to call it that. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you have songs that have been on, you know, like mega-selling records, mm-hmm. you know, like by the Dixie Chicks,
right.
and Garth Brooks. So you've got a taste of both worlds there.
Yeah, and I can tell you one finances the other.
That's what I figured. You know? Right, yeah, yeah.
And that's why I'm able to put out records like my dad's or my Odd Records or whatever, you know. It's because, you know, I'm making money from the songs doing well, and rather than buying real estate or boats that I don't need or things like that come to some people with success here in town, I'm throwing it back into music, and I'll do that until the money runs out, basically.
You know, you Darryl Scott, you put out your father Wayne Scott's first and only album last year when you started your record company. And Wayne Scott, has that affected your life a lot? Did you get a lot of performances after that? Like, what are some of the ripple effects that's had?
I've told him at the beginning I don't want to leave this mountain range, you know. Anything he can get me anywhere in the Appalachian Range or this area, I would do him. And the greatest thing I've ever done, he had me do Merlefest in North Carolina. Of everything I ever did in music, that took the cake for me. That was great. But, you know, to go anywhere else, I'm not even into that. I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'd rather be home. And
I know a ripple effect.
Yeah.
It's that he's told me a lot about is hearing his records on the radio in his area, right?
Oh, yeah. That's something to hear your son. And then as the years go by, here's me the same way, you know. That's that cotton don't grow like that in my holler, you know.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us. Thank you.
Thanks,
Terry.
Daryl Scott's latest CD is called The Invisible Man. His father Wayne Scott's CD is This Weary Way. We'll close with a song written and sung by Daryl Scott that was also recorded by our first guest, the Dixie Chicks. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Ian Chillog, Patty Leswing, Sam Brigger, and Jonathan Menjivar. I'm Terry Gross.
On the front porch swinging, looking out on a vacant field. Used to be filled with burl at a back, and now he knows it never will. Brothers found work in Indiana, sister's a nurse at the old folks home. Mama's still cooking too much for supper. Me, I've been a long time gone. Yeah, long time gone. Ain't hold a rose since I don't know when. Long time gone. Coming back again. Now Delia plays that old church piano, sitting out on her daddy's farm. She always thought we'd be together. Lord, I never meant to do her harm. Said she could hear me singing in the choir. Me, I heard another song. I got wind and hit the road running. Lord, I've been a long time gone. Been a long time gone. I ain't had a prayer since I don't know when. Long time gone. And it ain't coming back again.
Support for NPR comes from Capella University, an accredited university offering more than 20 doctoral degree programs online at capella.edu. From Endless Pools, swimming machines designed for exercise, fitness, and fun. DVD at 888-882-SWIM or endlesspool.com. And from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, our country music series continues with Billy Joe Shaver and Jimmy Dale Gilmore. Join us.
Standing on the corner, I didn't mean no harm. Along came the police and took me by the arm. It was down in Memphis, the corner of Beale and Main.